Greetings and welcome to the East Village Times podcast. I'm your host, James Clark, and with me, as usual, is Dominic Stern and Sammy Benbow. What's going on, guys? Baseball season is here. Are you pretty excited or what?
Yeah, as of this recording, the Padres have just wrapped up their final Cactus League game with a win over the Seattle Mariners today. I think they finished 15-14-1 after that tie yesterday. So encouraging, to say the least, that they finished above 500. I think there are a couple of little bits of news that are coming out here and there as we learn the final opening day roster, which we'll dive into a little bit more in depth later in the show. But I think the big news so far is that Jay Groom was optioned to AAA following the game today. I think that caught some people by surprise. I saw him on a lot of opening day roster projections. So that's the one surprise that I'm taking from it. But curious to hear what you guys think as well.
Yeah, we'll dive much more into that. But like you mentioned, the Padres look good this spring, especially when the team was there and it wasn't the Machado, Soto, all those guys gone at the World Baseball Classic. So encouraging. For the most part, they stayed healthy. Some guys who did have some setbacks, Austin Nola, Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, I guess, if you want to throw him in there, and Juan Soto, it seems like they're going to be ready within the first week of the season or on opening day. So I would consider that at least a victory.
Yeah, and for the most part, the team's coming into the start of the season healthy. I mean, I know you'd like to have Musgrove, you'd like to have Darvish at the top of the rotation, but this is a marathon. This is a long season. It's about getting them right and ready so that in August and September and in October and even November, they're performing. So exciting season for sure. We have a guest today, Mr. Eric Longenhagen, Fangraphs expert prospect guru. I know the Padres prospects aren't exactly the hot commodity right now, but we're definitely going to talk to Eric about his feelings on the current Major League team. He's seen it built slowly like we have. And then we're going to talk some prospects too, because there are some very interesting players within the system that maybe people haven't heard of that could factor in the coming season. So stay tuned. Mr. Eric Longenhagen will be joining us and we'll be talking Padres prospects. All right, welcome back, folks. This is episode number 170 of the Padres EVD podcast. We are pleased that Mr. Eric Longenhagen is with us today. Fangraphs lead prospect analyst, prospect guru, who's done the show many times. How are you doing, Eric?
Doing pretty well, running around. Spring training's a blast, and we're getting to down to the nitty gritty now, where this is like the last week of minor league spring training. Here is the week of the 28th. So just trying to cram as much in before there's that little lull between now and extended spring.
Yeah, it's definitely a busy time of the year, but it's an exciting time. You get to see a lot of these young kids that are making their debut in the States, right?
Yeah. Yesterday, Tess Taruskin, who's a contributor at our site, she and I had our eyes on 7 baseball games yesterday. So wow. Just running around, you know, towards the end of minor league spring training here, they're starting to stagger start times. There are a bunch of night games and stuff. So we ran all over the place yesterday, you know, all over the valley with no work week rush hour traffic. It was really nice.
Arizona traffic is no joke too, especially if you're going from one side of town to the other. Ooh, man, it's really no joke.
Yes, yeah, for sure. It's gotten way worse since I moved here.
Yeah, it's definitely a booming city for sure. Eric, you know, we typically talk about prospects. That's what we've done over the past 3-4 years with you, discussing how this team has been built. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this major league team that we have before us. Those of us in San Diego that are older than 30 or 40, like I am, are absolute shock over the quality of talent that is here in San Diego. It's like a dream. Give me your thoughts on the San Diego Padres from the outside looking in.
Yeah, I mean, they really are the spiciest team in Major League Baseball. And, you know, our staff predictions will come out at the site here in the coming days. And I have them picked to win the division. And it's unbelievable the amount of talent at the very, you know, top of the organization. Just, you know, but obviously Juan Soto and Manny Machado, you start with them. And I think that the thing that has, like, you know, the way that they've buttressed that group of star players with, like, Matt Carpenters and Nelson Cruz's and Rugi Odor, that's really interesting. You know, they're grizzled, great clubhouse guys. And so, you know, when you look at their team, I think there's some things that you still want to get out of the catching position that you don't necessarily have right now. There are some things you're hoping to get out of center field that you haven't really for the last couple of years. And, you know, maybe Brian Reynolds is an option, yada, yada, yada. But obviously, like, it's a great team with a few interesting, you know, obviously some of the injuries to all the lefties and guys in the bullpen has been a theme here this spring. But yeah, obviously, like, a slam dunk contender and maybe just the most entertaining team in you know, Major League Baseball. And yeah. So, yeah, I think they're teed up here to do, to be in the mix at the very end. Like, they are a dangerous contending team, no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, after years of Chris DeNarfia and Will Venable, just vanilla type players, it's pretty amazing to see the characters that they have now.
Yeah. I think it's obviously, like, anytime you start having a mix of guys like this, when the ingredients that you're putting in are so strong and concentrated the way it is with Ruggie, you know, like, it's going to be interesting. So, but I think it's the kind of are like the Patriots teams of 10, 15 years ago when it's just like, yeah, we can, sure, Randy Moss is like miserable over there, like, fine, you know, Corey Dillon, come on down, that type of stuff. And I do think that the way they've pieced the group together, everyone is going to be in a situation that allows them to succeed, whether David Dahl makes the roster, you know, he and Hayes and Jose Azucar kind of are a nice complement to one another. And Ruggie and Nelly are both, you know, dangerous guys to have coming off of your bench. And, you know, Carp and Nelly can platoon in that DH spot. Like, I think they've got a good mix. And I think the farm system is, yeah, strong enough that maybe you can't do a Juan Soto trade again. But you definitely, the amateur scouting staff is so good at picking players that they just, there are guys around still that if you want to make a big trade, they're probably the horses still to do that with. So I think they're in really great shape to be, you know, one of the most dangerous teams in baseball over the next 2-3 years for sure.
Eric, you briefly mentioned the catching position. I think that one of the Padres prospects, I guess you could call him, who is poised to make an impact this year is Luis Campusano. And I think as Padres fans and, you know, just kind of in the media alike, we've been waiting for him to make an impact. You saw him make his debut in 2020. He came up a little bit in 2021 and 2022. It looks like this is the first year where he's actually going to get to make a sizable impact on the team. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on him and to see if he is capable of taking that next step and emerging into that role as a, you know, starting catcher in the majors.
Yeah, I think I don't know if now is quite the time. They do seem to be pretty frustrated with him, and this has been going on for kind of a while where he's just sort of been percolating, you know, at AAA. And obviously you're not gleaning anything from his offensive performance at, you know, in the PCL, just the ballpark, that home ballpark and the ballparks that they tend to play in. It's not really giving you on the surface like a whole lot of indication that this guy is actually this talented. But I think the rule of thumb with catchers among scouts is if they have offensive potential, you just give them all the runway that you can. It is so rare to have someone at that position who has Campusano's offensive ability, aside from his plate discipline. The plate discipline, the discipline piece of it is not great. And it rounds down a bunch of the other aspects of what he's doing offensively. But I do think that, yeah, like if we start looking at the catchers in the big leagues, you have your Real Mutos and your Will Smiths at the very top, and you don't have to go very far down the line before this guy's offensive ability is like in the mix with those guys. So, you know, I think that being on the big league team where there are stakes and you're just working every day for this, you know, really visceral thing is going to be much different than being in El Paso and going to Reno and going to Vegas. And so I hope that brings something out of him to be around some of these guys like Nelson Cruz and Ruggie Odor. And I also think Brett Sullivan is interesting. Like Brett Sullivan has some of the best bat to ball skills of guys who were like in the minor leagues last year. So he's, you know, obviously you guys have seen him and he's not especially physical and he has some of his own issues on defense, but just again, like he has a plus skill, a really important one in the bat to ball ability and catches. And so like, I do think that trio of Nola, Campusano and Sullivan, like it is good enough. Those three guys to do what needs to get done this year. And ideally, yeah, that Campusano at some point will grab the job and run with it. It's just about him doing it now.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of potential there, which it seems like you would agree. And there's also seemingly some potential the Padres are starting to get out of Jay Groom. They just announced today that they're optioning him to AAA. What have you seen from him? Because I believe the last time we talked to you, he was still a member of the Red Sox organization. So getting your perspective on this podcast would be new from him. And also, what did you see from him this spring?
Yeah, so I saw Groom in person this spring. It was like a B game at like 10 or 11 a.m. So obviously, like, conditions aren't ideal for this guy to like really be bringing it. You know, he was sitting about 90. It's four pretty distinct pitches and fair command. Gone are the days where it's like, oh yeah, Jay Groom, like, hey, look at that curveball, and you know, he's left-handed, and look at that arm stroke and the ride on the fastball that might be in there. And you know, he's a back end starter. It's good to have a guy like that around, and obviously good for this guy. Like, this guy's had personal struggles. His family has issues with drugs and stuff. It's well documented, and he's, you know, he was raised in that and has been through a lot to get to where he is. And just stuff wise, it's, you know, four fair pitches, 30 grade fastball velocity, at least in my look this spring, right? Like, he was sitting 90, it was 11 a.m. on the backfield in a B game. You know, so he's fine, and it's good to have him around as depth, but I don't think that this guy is like, hey, look out. You know, it's not like the Padres tend to be the team that takes an arm from somewhere else and they take a leap. Like, they are not that team. It's nice to have him around. Low impact guy, though.
Yeah.
And while we're on the topic of, you know, potentially MLB ready pitchers for the Padres, I think an interesting case this spring has been Brent Honeywell. He hasn't shown great results, but it looks like his stuff is playing up similar to where it was when he was a prospect with the Rays. I'm curious to get your thoughts on what his potential is for making an impact this year. It looks like the team is more inclined to take him on the roster as a reliever just because he's out of options. But yeah. I'm curious to hear if you think he's got any shot at maybe becoming a higher leverage reliever is what they might have planned for him.
I kind of don't think so. I do think that it's nice to have him in that like multi-inning role. Anytime you have a guy who has like a weapon against opposite handed hitters who has starting experience and you move him into the bullpen, I really like that type of guy as a long man in the middle of the game. Someone who's coming in with, you know, runners on base, works you out of that jam, and Honeywell's got stones. Like, the Padres, if we're ranking the things that they care about when they're picking pitchers to have on their roster and in their organization, it's like, do you have cojones? Okay. And that's Honeywell. So I don't think, you know, maybe there's a chance that they can start him in like in a middle inning long role and then transition him into the rotation over time, or maybe injuries necessitate that he has to make some starts. He's like a souped up version of Chris Mott, where there's just, you know, more better stuff across the board. But I think, you know, for most of these pitchers who have the track record of injuries that Brent Honeywell does, that comes for them again, and it comes for them over and over again. And so limiting his role for the long term might be a way to try to mitigate that and keep him healthy, which I think would be good for everybody. So I tend to think that it'll be more of like a fireman in the middle of the game type guy.
Interesting. You know, he was so highly regarded. It's tough. Pitchers just fall from grace so fast in this game of baseball. I mean, it is what it is, man.
When you're focused on like one team system and it starts happening to your pitchers, it feels like, oh, but it just happens to everybody's pitchers. Like, Andrew Painter's UCL is not great right now. And like, Grayson Rodriguez has been shelled all spring, even though his velocity is fine. And like, Alex Reyes is a Dodger. And so like, we go on and on.
Yeah.
And it just happens to Brendan McKay and AJ Puck and everybody. So yeah, like, it happened to Honeywell a lot.
Yeah. It's just the nature of the beast. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Ryan Weathers, someone who's kind of toiled in AAA last season, didn't exactly have a great season, but was pitching in the PCL and obviously hitters league. I personally expect him to kind of make that jump this year. I'd love to hear your thoughts on him moving forward, if you think he has the stuff to possibly make a rotation impact on this team.
Yeah, I think it's possible. He's definitely going to have to be one of those like inefficient, shorter outing starters to do it. His fastball is just very vulnerable. The shape and angle of his fastball is very hittable. And last year, you know, he sat like 93 last year. He's waxed and waned as a prospect. There were times when it was below that. There have been times when it's been above that. He and Morey hit, Adrian Morey honed both. Their fastballs just have never really played at the velocity that you know, or rather they've never played like you would hope given their velocity. And some of it on Morey Hone's end is like command related too. And so what I think Ryan Weathers needs to do is like pitch off of his secondary stuff more often. You're still looking at a guy who's using his fastball. I mean, 53% of the time last year, like that's pretty high for someone whose fastball is as vulnerable as his is. So, you know, pitch backwards, probably again, like a guy whose best fit is in that multi-inning role coming out of your bullpen. He's another one where for a while I thought when he was a prospect that his slider command was so good that it was going to be fine, that, you know, some of the issues with the fastball were what they were. I had like a 4-5 starter on him, which like for the you know, Padres scouting staff, that's like a C1 starter basically is a 45 for me. And you know, he hasn't quite hit that yet. And he's 23. There's still time for something. I do think he's like a perfectly fine member of your 40-man roster and pitching staff, but probably like at the back of your rotation at best. And most effectively, again, like in that Honeywell style, kind of more like Josh Fleming, really, with like the Rays,
okay,
where it's like, I'm coming in, here's my slider a ton. And then I'm going to, you know, put the fastball where you can't get on it up here. Just this fastball just does not play in the zone.
Last guy I wanted to touch on, at least in terms of the bullpen, is Moises Lugo. And he's someone that's been in the Padres system for some time, I think since 2017 or 2018, started in the Dominican Summer League, and he's worked his way up. And it looks like he could be a dark horse in the bullpen this year. He's only given up one run in 9 innings in the spring. He struck out 10 guys. He looks like he has pretty solid stuff. I'm curious if you've gotten the chance to see him throw, and if so, if he does have potential to kind of take that next step and, you know, step in as a dark horse in a pretty deep Padres bullpen, especially with some early injuries.
Yes, I think that's a good pull. It's, you know, mid-90s with natural cut and an above average slider. The strikes are not there consistently enough right now for me to just be like, yep, he should be on the active roster. You know, the manager will feel confident going to this guy. Like, that's not where his strike throwing has been at for me historically. But for sure on stuff, yes, like his stuff is good enough to get big league hitters out. And if I think, you know, as an up down guy right now, as an emergency dude, great. It's wonderful to have this guy at the upper levels of your minor leagues. And while he's, you know, be optionable still, he's not really on your roster. And, you know, in the event that you have the rash of injuries that they have started to have early on, everybody's going to deal with this, right? But the fact that it's already happening means that, well, you're not the team who's going to avoid it this year, you know? But yeah, like it's, he's pretty interesting. And they have a couple guys like that. And, you know, like Jose Lopez, and they have, you know, these mid-90s with a good secondary pitch dudes who don't really throw strikes. They've got like a handful of those guys, and I think Lugo's for sure an interesting one.
Yeah, there's definitely, like you said, it's a good pull for the Padres to actually get someone contributing at the major league system, our major league time that's been in the system for a while. Let's move into prospects. That's your cup of tea. That's I think what a lot of people are wanting to hear, your takes on some of these young prospects. Let's first start with the huge Christmas present in the corner for Padre fans, and that's Ethan Salas. I mean, I don't even know how. Well, I mean, I know you've seen him a few times. Give us your thoughts on him. I mean, just so mature for his age. It's just remarkable. And at that position.
Yeah, he played in the double A game yesterday.
Yeah, right? Like, who the hell does that at that age?
So, yeah, like, actually, let me see. I'm going to share my screen. Let me get this video prime because I do have video of his double yesterday. Let me cue that up. But so One of my, and we'll just see if it, hopefully it'll look nice. And if not, like, I'll have video from this spring up it within the next couple of weeks when I get to the Padres prospect list, like from these spring looks. But let me just see if I can find it here. But, you know, one of the other scouts who was at the field yesterday was telling me about, I guess John Heyman wrote about Ethan Salas recently. Is that true? That like John Heyman wrote something about him, you know, having like Hall of Fame ability. It's kind of a lot to put on like a teenager, but he is he does look awesome. He has stuff on defense that is not, you know, he's 16 and so it's fine. But yeah, like he had balls getting by him yesterday in the double A game, but you know, defensively, I mean, in terms of what he's like physically at his age, his swing is a lot like the finish of his swing is a lot like Kyle Tucker's swing. Ooh. So like, if you can imagine like Kyle Tucker catching, that's kind of what it looks like. Let me see if I'm pretty sure that this is close to where I want to be for his double. And then let me just get, the screen share going and maybe you guys can see it, but, share that.
Yeah. While you're getting this set up, friendly reminder to everyone, our podcast is now up on YouTube, so you can watch this sort of stuff.
So I don't know how like nice and smooth it's playing for you guys because I'm, you know, sending it over the internet and for me it looks good. But that's Ian Clarkin on the mound for Seattle yesterday. And yeah, see, it's even kind of choppy for me. I'll try to post something, you know, for somewhere for people to look at, but yeah, like it's a good thing.
Beautiful. I mean, he let the ball get deep and he just powered. That's something that's double A quality of an at bat, right? I mean, this is a 16-year-old, someone who wouldn't even be on radar for being drafted at this point if he was in. Right. It's just remarkable. I mean, this is a big pull for the Padres. What do you think reasonable time frame for him to make his major league debut? Man. I know. Few catchers debut under the age of 2021. Is this going to be a Pudge Rodriguez type of deal where debuts a catcher?
I don't know. That's it. That's an interesting comp because I would believe that like this front office. Well, first of all, this front office does not F around when it comes to promoting guys who they want to challenge and think are ready, even to test them to see if they are when they maybe aren't, like, you know, CJ Abrams dealt with. Right. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't surprise me if they push him. I can't even begin to conceive of, like, he would have to just rake like Wander Franco basically at every level to get there before the age of 20. I think it will probably, the defensive part of it is going to take time, and catchers almost always take a little extra time because they're going to get beat up. Yes. For this guy to like catch, you know, 40 games, 60 games, 80 games, 100 games year over year, like, you're going to increase what his workload is like back there to try to get him into a place where he's able to hold up to, you know, being a primary big league catcher, like 100 games. So that's going to take time. And I, you know, would like to see his body continue to mature into a place where he can handle that a little bit better. But yeah, he's really exciting. This is not like one of those, you know, for sure, I throw water on guys who, if I think that they're not good, even if they got, you know, like Eric Pena with the Royals, like, he's not good. You know, top five pick Nick Gonzalez with the Pirates, I don't think he's any good, right? Like, Robert Poisson's not any good. Like, it's over. Wilman Diaz with the Dodgers, I saw him yesterday. He's gained like 30 pounds. He has like 30 grade bat speed. It's over. No, these guys aren't going to make it. But Ethan Salas is really lighting me up, and he's lighting up a bunch of other guys. And the audio from that clip, is, as soon as he hits that like opposite gap double that one hops the wall and it's just like a freaking laser off his barrel, everyone in the scout section is giggling.
Yeah, you know? Right.
They're all giggling. Yeah. So everybody's excited about this. Let's see what happens.
His bat is so good. Do you think that they would possibly move him off of catcher? I mean, is that even... I know Sorority, it's a 16-year-old. So what? I mean, what can you?
The impact potential if he can catch is so huge. His arm is there.
That he lacks at this point.
Yeah, I think like one thing that I'm concerned about is like I want to be honest about how exciting this guy is, and I also don't want the expectations for him.
Yeah.
And the way the the internet foments that, and that like, gets back to these young impressionable people. I don't want that to alter what the outcome is.
Okay.
I don't. So like, I want to sit here and be honest about how exciting he is. For and sure. It's true, but I also want, like, I wish we could all collectively be responsible for this kid's own good. So that that is what happens.
Yes.
Like, you know, Kevin Durant has, like, you know, I feel like it impacted him, and John Morant, like, it impacted him, just what it's like to be them in the world we're living in. And like, for you to be 17 and have that stuff start to kind of bubble up, like, I'm worried about that. But yeah, kid, like, boy, he sure looks good, you know, in the 3 games I've seen.
Well, Eric, you can certainly count on Padres Twitter to be responsible with how they view Padres prospects, because they certainly have a great track record of doing that.
It's everybody. So it's not just those guys. It's just people on Twitter, folks. It's not like specific to Phillies Twitter or Cubs Twitter. Like, it's just folks on Twitter.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Sorry, everyone. If you're pissing me for that, go ahead and tweet at me.
Sorry.
You're 100% right, though. But another prospect the Fangraphs is really high on is number one Padres prospect, Jackson Merrill. Fangraphs has him ranked at number 10 in all of Major League Baseball prospects. Really stood out this spring. Obviously way too young for the Padres to keep on the roster. But what have you seen from Merrill that intrigues you?
Yeah, you know, a scout told, this is sort of like secondhand, okay, but a scout told me that the Padres had Merrill higher on their draft board than Marcelo Meyer when they took Merrill in the back end of the first round of that draft, that they had like Merrill like super duper high on their board. And now that's how I see it. Like, I've got Merrill ahead of some of the guys from that draft who were picked ahead of him in the first round. Just really just because of confidence in the hit tool. I say in the scouting report on the Hondo, it's like if Michael Brantley played shortstop, Kyle Tucker catching, Michael Brantley playing shortstop. But yeah, like, his feel for contact is sublime. He's perfectly good shortstop. He's not like electric over there, but he's gotten bigger and stronger since high school without getting worse there. And so that's pretty encouraging. Yeah, I just really think that his bat to ball ability is very special. And, you know, he's going to hit for power through sheer amount of contact and the quality of the contact that this guy's making. Even though his raw power is just like solid, he's not, you know, he's not your Judge, he's not Yordan Alvarez, certainly he's, you know, not even, you know, Max Muncy from like a, you know, raw power perspective, he's not Manny Machado or Fernando Tatis, but his contact is flush like a lot and all over the zone. And just, it's beautiful to watch him stay inside the ball, you know, middle of the way, work the opposite field gap. And so, yeah, I really, really think he's going to hit. And the degree of confidence in that part of it is why I felt comfortable elevating him above Jordan Lawler and above Marcelo Meyer and above some of those other guys who are like that tier below where I have him on the top 100.
Eric, I'm just curious. You talk to these guys, obviously. Do you get the feeling, talking to some of them, that they're just ball players? I mean, there's no other way to kind of describe it, that they just want to be there and they love the game. Is that a factor in some of your rankings and decisions?
It is hard. I don't often talk to players. Sometimes you're just around them on the backfields that you interact with them or are around them being like social at work. Mm-hmm. The scale at like that I'm trying to do my job at, where like it's me and like freelance contributor doing all 30 teams, does not really allow for me to have a makeup feel for the entire player universe. Okay. But makeup is a separator for me. Like, if I were working for a team and had like only a subset of teams that I was covering, yeah, then that would be a thing that I cared a lot about, like their personhood and how much they like baseball, because you're doing a lot of baseball and you're pushing through a lot of discomfort to do that baseball. And so, yeah, you have to like it. And it's like the same thing if you want to work in baseball at all. And it's definitely true if you're a player. And I think that every team ideally wants to acquire players who, for whom that is true. And, but it's, you know, we're not really fully formed until we're in our mid 20s. And so a lot of these guys, you know, it's a mixed bag. You've got people retiring voluntarily early and it's a grind and you don't know if you're going to be able to do it until you're like immersed in it. Yeah. And it doesn't agree with everybody.
True. True.
So now that we've gone over kind of, you know, the blue chip prospects, so to speak, your Jackson Merrills, your Ethan Salas's, I'm curious because the Padres, you know, they don't have a super deep system. They're kind of getting back to that level. You know, obviously they're not going to replicate what they had in 2019 or 2020 when they had all those prospects. If you had to pick one guy from the Padres system who we're not really talking about right now, who we could be talking about as, you know, the next big thing in a year or so, who do you go to?
That's a good one. Yeah. Who has that chance to really pop? Rosman Verdugo's really been hitting this spring. I've got Sammy Zavala on my 100 already, so I don't feel like he counts as someone who I can, you know, he and Dylan Lesko both, like, you guys know,
yeah,
both click there. Great. The guys who have stood out to me this spring are like Juan Zabala, the catcher, 23-year-old catcher. I think he was only in A ball last year, but just like, he's just a good baseball player. He's built great and can hit and, you know, plays an up the middle position. I really like him. There have been a couple teenagers, maybe a couple of them are like 20 or even 21, who have like popped 99 for me on the backfields this spring, like guys who weren't really on my radar until I ran into them here this spring, like Luis Herman, Bradley Rodriguez was like 94 to 97 and touched a nine yesterday in the double A game. He's 19. It's super duper relievery. But, you know, it's a 19-year-old who's touch 99. And then was there one other young guy who was throwing hard? Miguel Mendez was sitting 94, 96 for me in the low A game a couple weeks ago. I guess maybe that was a little over a week ago. And it's kind of scattered, but like he might be even a little bit older. I think he's probably 20 or 21, but 94, 96 and, you know, very, very projectable frame. Breaking ball stuff was inconsistent, but was flashing. Shape varied, like 79, 83. That velo band breaking ball is kind of moving all over the place. But just interesting guy. And then I really think Chris Lincoln's good. Chris Lincoln doesn't throw all that hard, but he commands the crap out of it, man. And he's got plus secondary stuff. And that fastball has enough hair on it that it doesn't find the barrel. So I think Chris Lincoln's a guy who might be in like the back of the rotation mix within the next like couple of years.
Awesome. Awesome. Interesting to get your thoughts and especially fresh thoughts of players that you've just seen. A lot of these guys are just making their state debuts. They were in the DSL, so it's hard to get information on them. It's hard to see, you know, you can get readings on speed, but once you see the movement yourself, you get a better idea of what they're really doing. And command is also huge for a lot of these young guys throwing mid 90s as teenagers, right? I mean, it's pretty remarkable. You mentioned, Sammy Zavala a little bit. I'd love to hear your thoughts on whether you think power is going to come from him. He's still 18. The bat to ball skills are there. Do you think he will develop a little more power as he matures and gains weight?
Yeah, I think he's in that medium frame area. It's not like he's young Jordan Walker. He's not like, you know, Christian Robinson or anyone like that, where it's like, yeah, that guy's got room for 30 pounds without making him look heavy and maxed out. He's more in that, you know, you do get the Carlos Gonzalez comps with him. And I think that physically that's pretty close. He's like in that 6'1 area. I think that like the place where the power comes for him is just his bat speed and just rotational athleticism. His hands are really alive and, you know, the hips fire and then the hands are following in like an exciting way. And definitely he's bat to ball skill first. That's for sure what is driving the profile, but I think there's going to be enough power at maturity for him to profile as a corner outfielder. I, you know, have a 50 on him. That's like every day, every inning player, basically, not someone who's, you know, coming off the field. And the fact that they pushed him last year, like if you just go, you know, to the Fangraphs minor league leaderboards and sort the whole, you know, Padres org by age, like inverse age, and you see him and like that he was at A ball and like it's like DSL, 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 Sammy Zavala, complex and A ball. And then there's his line. It's like, wow. So yeah, I'm a believer in his bat to ball ability as well. And I think that, you know, there's enough physical projection there that he'll have power to be an, you know, again, in Padres scouting parlance, a B2 in right field.
There are a couple of good Padres pitchers who aren't, you know, your top 100 guys by any stretch of the imagination, but seem to be, you know, respectable prospects that are hopefully going to be working their way through the system in these upcoming years. Robbie Snelling, Adam Mazur, Victor Lizarraga, just to name a few. Have you seen anything from any of those guys that gives you any faith that they could be major league arms?
Mazur, I have not seen in person yet, but for him, for sure, at least a power reliever, like that's absolutely in play. I tend not to be high on the high school aged pitching contingent. There's just so much time for things to go wrong, and things often do. So Lizarraga for me was, when I saw him a couple times last year, I was pretty lukewarm on him.
Okay.
You know, I do think that he's more like a high floor back of the rotation type than he is someone who has big potential, even though he's pretty young. And then Robbie Snelling is the, if we're like looking at all the high school pitchers who are in that, like, I'm going to get seven figures in the draft, he's towards the bottom for me just because of the violence in his delivery. Just the track record of guys whose deliveries are as violent as his is not very good. And so, like, for sure, that is the player demographic where the player's evaluation and their valuation are like most different just because of how much risk I associate with that contingent of player.
Yeah.
And now Lizarraga's a little bit different just because, like, there are strikes and, you know, the repertoire is already relatively robust, and, you know, Snelling has a deep repertoire too. He's another one of those guys where, like, is this fastball going to play quite like you hope it is? But yeah, like, obviously these are the types of guys who you put in the system and you sort of see what happens.
Yeah.
I am always, in terms of like the future value grade I'm putting on those guys for the prospect list, going to tend to round down just because of the risk associated with that demographic of player. So those guys are all in the 40 plus tier, which is where like those high risk, high upside players. Lizarraga, I'm not sure where I'm going to slide yet. Like, I have to reckon what, you know, scout other, you know, source opinions are with what I saw from him last year, which was like pretty vanilla. Okay. So I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with him yet, but Mazur and Snelling both will be in that 40 plus tier for me. And just like, let's see what happens over the next couple of years as they try to develop.
Where does Dylan Lesko fall into that demographic? I mean, obviously a high school type arm, already had the arm injury, remarkable changeup. What is your thoughts on Lesko moving forward? Just curious.
Yeah, he's one of those where, like, I would have him I do, like, at the high end of where I would put these like big bonus prep pitchers. When he, you know, it was like a 70 grade changeup already.
Yeah.
Before he got hurt. And then obviously the velo is what it was, and his frame is the prototype. I hope you are the one. If not, you are the prototype, Dylan Lesko. But it's his breaking ball that took a step forward before he blew out that gave me the confidence to go like all in, basically as high as I would for a high school pitcher this age, like a Mick Abel and those, you know, those kinds of guys. And so, yeah, like, obviously TJ rehab is not a given, but it is a high probability. I'm really excited to try to get a look at him as he gets going here in Arizona, I would guess. And just the quality of that changeup on its own. I mean, you guys saw what Chris Paddock was able to do just with the changeup and the way his fastball played the way it did. And then things, he had to make an adjustment, right? And his ability to do that has been interrupted by injury, and he struggled with it. And so that is what might happen here, is the same components are in place where there's that kind of velocity and fastball quality and that kind of changeup and that kind of frame. And if the breaking ball quality is there, then sky's the limit. And then if that was a short-term thing and it doesn't come back, after the TJ, then we'll see. Then maybe it will be more paddocky where there are bumps and bruises. You know, early career Cole Hamels had that too. Ooh, I'm excited to try to see him too.
Yeah.
That's right. Cole Hamels is a Padre too. Shit.
You'll see him probably.
I hope so. I like Cole. Cole signed a jersey for me when I was like 15. So Lehigh Valley Mall.
Nice. Eric, we really appreciate your time. I have one more quick question before you get out of here. I'd love to hear your thoughts on two former highly regarded Padres prospects who are still in the system. Josh Mears, Pearsall Ornelas. Give me your thoughts on either one. If they'll ever make that major league debut, I was really high on Ornelas, and I don't know what happened with him. Mears obviously had swing missed and dynamic issues, but give me your thoughts on both those young men.
Yeah. Mears has, you know, bat to ball red flag. You know, if you're just watching him, if you're looking at the data, even if you're adjusting for his age, he's 22. It's like, you know, 30 grade contact ability for a 22 year old. So
it's always been that way too. I mean, I remember as an 18, 19 year old seeing him in the back lot taking batting practice and swinging and missing. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, what? How are you swinging and missing batting practice? Like,
yeah, it's interesting. You know, he was raw. He was at the area code games and didn't have a college scholarship offer yet. Like, he was uncommitted at the area code games and he really blew up there. And then he got his offer from Purdue, but obviously he never made it there. And then he hit that ball like 118 his first spring. And, you know,
I was there. I can still hear it.
you just get so caught up in stuff like that. And his card prices like skyrocketed. Somebody told me after that. And I was just like, it's like, you know, crypto, Josh Mears, crypto. But that power's still there. Yeah. It's just that the swing and miss stuff is so, so rough with, you know, Josh Mears is the type of guy who goes to Korea and makes, you know, $1 million a year and hits like 30 bombs in Korea and is a rock star. Tirso had swing issues early on where he just wasn't actualizing any kind of power. And the changes that they tried to make to get him to lift the ball more, I think mess with him. Like, it made him worse.
Yeah.
I do think there's still enough here that he's going to be a big leaguer. He's the type of guy who I would put a 40 on, or like the Padres and a bunch of the teams that come from like the Theo Epstein tree, I think, like Jason McLeod, those types of guys. They use like an alphanumerical system, A1, A2, B1, B2 to like describe roles. And so like Tirso's a C2 for me, like a 40 who has big league value. He might have like a little 3-year peak and window, like Justin Bour, you know, or like Garrett Cooper's in the middle of now, or like Luke Voit was one of these guys, right? Where, hey, like you're performing at AAA really, really well. You're like one of the best handful of hitters at AAA. You could be a low end first base DH type guy when we're lining up all the big leaguers at that position. Like, you're in the bottom third of that group, but you still belong in there. And those guys have, you know, big league careers, and they're the types of dudes who you can win with, but you're not really winning because of.
Yeah.
And I think Tirso, who's another guy who's like, you know, just from being around him enough over the last several years, like, that guy loves baseball and, you know, he's good to be around. And those are the things that are going to help, I think, grease the wheels for that type of role for him for a little while, at least.
Interesting to hear, because, you know, you do root for some of these guys. You talk to them, you get to know them a little bit, and you do hope that they are able to reach the potential that they have. But this game's tough. It really is. Mr. Eric Loggenhagen, thank you so much for your time today, man. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. When will the Padre list be out? A couple months, May, June?
I would say, yeah, like within, I'm doing Philly, and Tess and I are double barreling Atlanta now. And then I think we will do Detroit after that. And then I have to decide whether to do the West Palm group in Florida next, or if I'll come back to do some Arizona stuff.
Okay. Okay.
But so it, you know, it will probably, I would guess probably about a month out. And I know that I work at a non-traditional pace as far as like the release of these goes related to the places that also do this. But yeah, like the stuff that you're hearing on the pod, I hope is the stuff that I'm bringing to that Padres list and every org's list, and everyone gets their due diligence, and I'm turning over rocks in the backfields, and awesome. I hope it'll be worth the wait. And I think it will.
For sure. It's I know it's always ever changing and always a work in progress. I mean, you could go out to a game tomorrow and see something and jump out, and that's the beautiful thing about the game. It really is. We'll look to have you on the pod in a couple months. Maybe when the list comes out, we'll shoot you here on that. Eric, thank you so much again for your time. We really appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right, folks, welcome back. Always a great conversation with Eric Longenhagen, but just so generous with his time with the site and talking to us. Great information, especially about the young pitchers that he saw within the last couple of days in the minor league system. I mean, that's just valuable information. He brings it. It was also nice to talk to him about the major league team, a couple of major league players, and get his thoughts on that. I was surprised on his, his evaluation of Groom and Weathers, but sometimes you need that, right? I mean, you need an outside opinion to kind of set you in place. I mean, as a fan of this organization and of this team, you get fall in love with some of these players and you think that their abilities are more than what they actually are. So it's nice to have a honest opinion. Guys, your thoughts on the discussion Eric gave us?
Yeah, he was really insightful. It was definitely nice having him on. We really appreciated having him on. I know he's a recurring guest on the podcast, but especially with a team that's pretty thin on the prospect side, at least in terms of like major league impact. I was really curious to get his thoughts on Luis Campuzano. He offered some good insight there with, you know, his offensive ceiling, his defensive limitations, and then also what he sees in Jay Groom, maybe what he sees in Brent Honeywell. It was interesting to kind of just pick his brain a little bit about that and see if these guys can make a major league impact, because a lot of times the division winning clubs, the world championship winning clubs, yeah, they've got the stars, but they've also got those guys around the edges that are really solid complementary pieces. And I think the Padres do have a roster skeleton that kind of resembles that, where you could see Brent Honeywell developing into a decent reliever. You could see Jay Groom throwing some innings down the stretch. So it was interesting, and it was nice to get his thoughts on a wide variety of Padres topics.
Yeah, and he also said some things that, like, you know, me just like watching the team, where I'm like, oh, I didn't really think of that. Like, especially with him saying that Weather should probably go more off-speed centric. And I'm like, oh, every time I watch him, I'm like, man, this dude's slider's not good. Obviously, that was 2021 and a lot has changed since then. But it's just those little things where, I mean, he gets to see him in the backfields in a little bit of a different perspective, and he gets to talk to people who we obviously don't get to. It's things like that that make having those guests on really cool, and it makes why people come and listen to our podcast.
Yeah, no, and for him to kind of say pump the brakes on Ethan Salas was interesting as well, because I like that sense of responsibility that he has, that he doesn't want to claim him a first ballot Hall of Famer already at age 16 or 17. That there's a lot of reason to be positive for him, but you know, you do need to kind of the brakes. He does have stuff to work on, and it's, I just like that sense of responsibility that Eric brought in his evaluation of Ethan Salas. So it's an amazing time to be a Padre fan. Thursday, the season opens. Blake Snell against German Marquez, right? German Marquez, is that who's starting for the Rockies?
Yes.
Awesome. That's going to be an exciting time. Guys, your thoughts on the upcoming series with the Rockies. What are you expecting from this team early on, pre-Tatis? Let's just go over a couple things before we get out of here.
Yeah, it's fun that we finally get to stop speculating and actually get playing games that matter. I think that's going to be exciting just in and of itself. I think what I'm going to be looking for, at least for the first couple weeks and maybe even month of the season, is the strength of the pitching rotation, specifically the starting rotation. Yu Darvish won't be fully built up yet. Joe Musgrove sounds like he's going to miss at least one, maybe two turns in the rotation. Not catastrophic injuries by any means, but the team is going to be relying on Nick Martinez and Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, to give them innings when they haven't previously done so. I saw Lugo went six innings today, being Monday, the last Cactus League game, and he looked pretty good today. Six innings, only two runs allowed. So the Padres are definitely going to be counting on quality starts and for starters to work deep into the games, just so you don't have to tax that bullpen. I still think that they are, you know, a very formidable team and a team that's going to have one of the top rotations in baseball when they're at full strength. But at least for the first few weeks, it will be a little tenuous just because you don't know what you're going to get from that starting rotation because they're relatively unproven for the most part.
Yeah, and I'm also intrigued to see what they do with that right field spot for the first 20 games for Fernando Tatis Jr.'s suspension, because you could roll out David Dahl, Jose Azokar. Those seem to be the options that we're probably going to see, but Matt Carpenter could also
a little outfield too as well, or they're working him in the outfield as well. I don't know if that's a possibility.
And you beat me to it. I was going to say Odor got some reps out there, because obviously the infield is pretty much locked up. You got Machado, Bogarts, Kim, and Cronenworth. So what are they going to do with that spot? And then also when he does come back, obviously that's further down the line and I'll get to be there because it's here in Arizona. That's obviously going to be the most exciting game regular season wise on quite some time. Obviously you have that opportunity when Juan Soto, Drury, and Bell all made their debut. But I think that they have options out there and that's all you can really ask for.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. Guys, anything we want to go over the roster, anything before we head out of here? I know we went a little bit over with the podcast, having a great time talking to Eric, but anything else we need to hit on before we get out of here?
I don't think a whole lot. I think the roster is starting to come together. We mentioned at the beginning of the show that Jay Groom was optioned down to AAA. It looks like Brent Honeywell is probably going to make the roster as a long reliever. I know Julio Teheran, who is another potential candidate for the back end of the rotation, looks like he was optioned down as well. So we'll see if he remains with the organization. I think it's interesting that Rougned Odor looks like he's probably going to make the roster. They've been trying him out in the outfield these last few days, and it seems like they want to keep him on as a versatile outfielder, but we'll see if that's a long-term solution. I don't think he's going to last the entire season on the roster, but it would be cool if he did. Other than that, I think it's mostly rounding into form unless you guys have anything that you're looking out for.
I think that the bullpen's for the most part set. You have those guys that the Padres have gotten used to throwing out there. And then I think you have some arms out there that I think we're all excited to see eventually, Jose Castillo being one of them. I think that the bullpen is going to be the strength of the team for the first month and a half or so. And then once that lineup really kind of starts to click, once Fernando Tatis Jr. gets stuck in there, once Darvish has a couple starts where he's able to go up to 100 pitches, same with Joe Musgrove, then that's going to be the strength of the team as well. I mean, Eric mentioned it. He picked the Padres to win the division. I mean, going into 2021, almost everyone was still picking the Dodgers, and everyone picked the Dodgers last year. This is different. I mean, you look at the odds in Vegas, and it's not that far off between the Padres and the Dodgers. Like, people are picking the Padres seriously to win the division, and I think that's super exciting.
Yeah, no, the Padres have definitely closed the gap between the two teams. So we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, there's a long season ahead, 162 games. There's a lot of factors. I think I'm most excited to see this top four actually in the lineup together, to see Tatis and Soto next to each other in a lineup. I can't wait for the end of April to see that. That's just, it's going to be unreal. I mean, I'm talking about decades of just obscurity with this team and having one, maybe two halfway type star all-stars, to have phenomenal players like that, players that are easily regarded as top 10 players in the world. It's pretty amazing, Padre fans. So enjoy this. We are an exciting time right now in San Diego. Aztecs, I mean, what else can I say? Soccer is booming, and there's just a lot of things to be excited about if you're a San Diego sports fan. I know a lot of guys are still sad about the Chargers, and obviously that's an issue. That's something that is going to just tug at your heartstrings for a while. I mean, there's no way to sugarcoat that, but there are exciting things happening in San Diego sports. So pay attention, fans. Give the Loyal some love. Give the Wave some love. Even the Soccer some love, who are opening a new stadium in the next year or so. Just San Diego sports is starting to take off. So enjoy it, fans. And the Padres are definitely leading the way. Dominic, I think we're good to go. We got opening day on Thursday. By the next time we record, we should have a sense of a record for this team. And we'll get to do a little bit of evaluation on lineup and maybe Bob Melvin's managerial techniques and see what's going on in that regard. So I'm excited to record again in the coming week. And I don't know. Go ahead and take us out of here, man. It's I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, can't wait to see the Padres in action. Hopefully a lot of Padres fans will be able to attend the opening week facing off against the Rockies and then the Diamondbacks. Obviously, I know that Sammy and I are out of town. James, you have any plans to go to Padre games or no?
I don't know. We'll see. I don't know. We'll see. that's pretty much all I have to say.
Yeah, so this has been episode 170 of the Padres East Village Times podcast. Thank you so much to Eric Loggenhagen for joining us, and thank you all for listening. Make sure to follow or subscribe on your preferred podcast platform, and also subscribe to us on YouTube. Hopefully, maybe you wanted to hop over and see that Ethan Salas video. Obviously, it wasn't great quality, but that's a reminder, we're on YouTube now, so make sure to subscribe to our podcast on YouTube as well, so you can see us talking about the Padres. And we'll come back with you with another episode in the next couple of weeks. And we thank you for tuning in.